Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome to the New Books Network. I'm one of the hosts, Dr. Miranda Melcher. And I'm very excited today to be interviewing the two authors of a very fascinating book. The book is titled Africa's Last Colonial Currency, out in 2021 from Pluto, translated from the original French. And we have both authors with us today to speak with us in English about their book, which is really quite a feat. So I'm very pleased to welcome Fanny Pijou and Dr. Ndongo Samba Sila to the podcast to talk about their book. Welcome.
Hi, Miranda. Thanks for the invitation.
Hi, Miranda.
I was wondering if, Fanny, perhaps you could start us off by introducing yourselves a little bit and explaining why you decided to write this book and write it together.
Okay, so I'm French and a journalist, and I work on African issues and about the relationship between France and Africa. And maybe I should say about Ndongo too. Ndongo is Senegalese and is a very brilliant economist working for the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation in Dakar. And so why we decided to write this book? In fact, each of us had previously worked and written papers on the CFA franc. But it was not enough because on one side, we can see that very few people in France are aware of the existence of the CFA franc. And those who know how it works are even fewer. And on the other side, we can see in Africa, many citizens use the CFA franc daily, but don't have the good information or the good resources to understand this CFA system, this monetary system. So I think this situation is partly the result of kind of a taboo that the French authorities maintained about on the subject for decades. And I think that one of their aims was to maintain ignorance, to keep the CFA franc alive as long as possible. So Ndongo and I wanted to break through this wall of silence or ignorance, and we decided to write an easily accessible book explaining the history of the CFA, how it works, and what are the problems it raises, who benefits from it, and how to get out of this colonial monetary system, which concerns today 14 countries. So at the end, maybe this is a book about French imperialism.
Thank you for introducing yourselves, as well as really helpfully outlining for us what the book is trying and I think succeeding in doing, and certainly something that is not particularly well known in France, in West Africa, but I think broader as well, this ignorance and maybe this taboo extends further. So hopefully we can help break that by interviewing and asking you guys both a little bit about the book and hopefully dispel some of those myths. So the obvious place to start is, of course, how was the CFA franc created? What was this colonial pact with France?
Oh, well, I could answer this question. Let's start by the colonial pact, because it is, a reality that came before the advent of the CFA franc. The expression in itself, colonial pact, refers to the division of labor between the European metropoles and their colonies. According to this division of labor, the colonies were prohibited from industrializing as they were supposed to provide raw materials to their metropole in exchange for manufactured products. So the trade between metropoles and their colonies were based on exclusive and preferential terms. The metropoles also enjoyed a relative monopoly on the external trade of their colonies, including the shipment of goods. And in that perspective, the monetary and financial dimension was an important pillar of the colonial pact, because colonial currencies were imposed to the populations using physical violence and repressive legal provisions that prohibited the use of local currencies. Despite colonial violence, Africans and especially African women opposed a strong resistance to the francs which circulated at that period in the African part of the French Empire before the birth of the CFA franc. And the CFA franc itself was created officially on December 26, 1945. That means in the aftermath of the Second World War. At that time, the situation was the following. The French economy was really devastated by the war. There were many shortages and the inflation was very high. And at the same time, the foreign exchange reserves, the gold reserves of the French economy were depleted. And so the French currency had to be devalued against the pound sterling, against the US dollar, etc. And there was a particular issue because at that time, as I said, the French franc was circulating throughout the French Empire. And this was called the monetary unity. That means one currency for one empire. And so the issue that arose was the following. Should the French franc be devalued uniformly across the empire so as to maintain the so-called monetary unity? Or should the French franc be devalued using different rates to take into account the fact that the French economy had been much more devastated than the economies of these colonies? Secretly, the French provisional government took the second option. That means using different rates of devaluation. And this decision gave birth to the so-called colonial francs, including the CFA franc and the Pacific franc. The two currencies were born at the same time, December 26, 1945. And when the CFA franc was created, it meant literally franc of the French colonies in Africa. In French, we would say franc des colonies françaises d'Afrique. What was interesting at that time was that the French authorities decided to give the CFA franc a high external value. For example, one CFA franc equaled 1.70 French franc in 1945. This was not something seen, for example, between the relationship between, let's say, England and its African colonies. They had, reasonable exchange rates. However, 3 years later, one CFA franc was exchanged with two French francs. That means the French franc was lower in value, in external value, first lower in external value compared to the French franc. This high external value of the CFA franc was instrumental in helping France reconquer the trade shares it lost during the Second World War, because during the war, the trade ties between the metropole and its colonies were severed, and so the French economy lost trade shares, and so the CFA franc was instrumental in reconquering those lost trade shares, because as economists usually say, when you have an overvalued currency, that means a currency which has an external value higher than economically justified, well, this currency will act as a subsidy to imports. That means that it will be easier for the economy to import goods abroad. But at the same time, it will also act as a tax on exports. That means that, well, your competitiveness, your ability to sell products abroad with some margin of profit will be, impaired. So that has been the historical role, initial role of the CFA franc.
Thank you for explaining that. That's a really important historical background. And in a lot of senses, it sort of sounds like the conclusion to that story will be, and then the countries became independent and created their own currencies. But of course, that's not what happened. And the title of the book suggests pretty much what did happen, which is a really sort of odd situation where the countries using the CFA franc do become independent, and yet the currency remains. How has this been possible, even as these countries have become independent?
This is a very insightful part of the story, I think. You were right to stress that France is the only former colonial power that has managed to keep its colonial monetary empire intact. As you know, the sterling zone, for example, disappeared with independence. So how France managed to do that? It's very simple. France organized in a very special way the decolonization of its sub-Saharan African colonies in 1960. At that time, the French authorities brought in power leaders who were favorable to them after having politically or physically eliminated their leaders, movements and parties who were struggled for independence. And then, in return for granting independence, the French government made the new state sign what he called cooperation agreements. And these agreements were covering various fields like defense, trade and exploitation of raw materials, economy, currency, finance, education, culture, etc. And concretely, these agreements were made to protect a kind of natural right of France over the African resources. And the idea was, of course, to ensure that France retained secure and low-cost access to African raw materials and that its company had easy access to markets and contracts on the continent. And the African presidents, African leaders, were left with no choice as they knew that they could face reprisals if they disobey, and we'll see this later, I think. And so this is how the CFA franc survived independence. And maybe there's another important point to keep in mind. Thanks to these cooperation agreements, France was able to maintain permanent military bases in Africa, which still exist today. So that's another part of the story to keep in mind when you speak about CFA franc.
Definitely a good point. Thank you for making sure that that's included in our awareness. Obviously, the CFA franc is quite unique, right? As you said, it's the only one really that lasts after empire. And one of the helpful things about the book is that it explains how exactly the system works, which is, as you said at the very beginning, definitely not something that many of us are aware of. So I was wondering, Ndongo, if you could explain to us some of the unique features of the system as compared to maybe other monetary unions. For example, one of the strange elements, what's an operations account?
Thanks, Miranda, for this question. Well, I think the first thing to say is that being part of a monetary union in itself is not that obvious. I mean, after the empire, because if you look at the IMF, the International Monetary Fund membership, we have 190 members, and only 41 countries officially belong to a monetary union. And among those, obviously, you have the CFA franc. The two blocks of the CFA franc, I mean Central Africa and West Africa. Fanny just told why these blocks were maintained. But the thing is, except for the Eurozone, there is no monetary union which has survived the which is not born during the colonial time. It is the Eurozone only which has been created, in the post-independence period. But the existing monetary unions, the two CFA franc blocks, and there's another monetary union in the Caribbean, the East Caribbean Currency Unit, those are the four monetary unions, the two CFA francs, the Caribbean, and the Eurozone. And only the Eurozone is a monetary union created in the post-independence period. So that means that monetary union is a very rare phenomenon. And most monetary unions, have been created during colonial times because colonial powers found it convenient for a number of reasons to have it. For example, it was convenient because having monetary unions helped lower transaction costs. Foreign exchange costs when you convert currencies into one another. But monetary unification was also an important symbol of political authority and imperial pride. And now, after the independence period, all the monetary blocks have been dismantled with the accession of former African colonies to independence, except for the CFA franc. And the thing is, the CFA franc is still a colonial currency, a colonial monetary union, in the sense that, the system has been Africanized in the sense that, before the CFA franc was managed in Paris by French people, etc., white people, you see. But since the 1970s, the system has been so-called Africanized. We have the central banks in Africa, in Dakar, in Yaoundé, the staff is African, and so people might think that now this is an African currency, but no, it's not an African currency, because the principles organizing the CFA franc have not been altered since the creation of the CFA franc in 1945, and those principles organizing the CFA franc, those pillars are, we have some of them. The first is the fixed exchange rate between the CFA franc and the French currency. That means the fixed exchange rate between the CFA franc and the French franc until 1999, and since then the peg against the euro. The second pillar is the free movement of income and capital between CFA franc countries and France, meaning that the French companies could repatriate their incomes, their capitals, without much restriction. The third and important pillar, which shows the colonial character of this currency system, is the control of the French treasury of the over the CFA franc management. And this includes the management of CFA franc countries' foreign exchange reserves. When we talk about foreign exchange reserves, we mean the international the payments in, the international money they had at their disposal. And there is this concept, of French guarantee, where the French treasury promises to extend loans in French currency to the two central banks of the CFA franc zone, so the one in Central Africa and the other in West Africa. And as a counterpart to that, these two central banks must deposit a share of their foreign exchange reserves in a special account of the French treasury. And this special account is called an operations account. This is a concept not known to financial people, not known to economists, because this is a concept created during colonial times by the French administration. The first embryo of operation accounts dates back to 1878. You see, and after the independence, the two central banks were obliged to deposit 100% of their foreign exchange at this operations account, because for each central bank, the treasury opened an account called the operation account, where they would hold their foreign exchange 100% after independence, and it had been lowered to 50% from the mid-2000s. Practically speaking, this means that, for example, if, let's say, an exporter in Cote d'Ivoire sells cocoa abroad, sells cocoa to the U.S., this cocoa exporter, will be paid in U.S. dollar, but these U.S. dollars, will, in fact, part of this US dollar, let's say that the Ivorian exporter gets, $1 million US dollar for its cocoa, the counterpart in CFA franc will be created and will be given to the Ivorian exporter. So the Ivorian exporter will receive the equivalent of $1 million of US dollar in CFA franc. But the $1 million, at least half of it, will have to be deposited. Will have to be deposited at the French Treasury, because this is a legal requirement. This is an agreement between the African countries and the French, and so that's how this system works. And among the features that really makes the CFA franc something unique is really the legal tutelage of the French government over the CFA franc, because you would not see that, let's say, in any other places. I mean, no country is legally under the tutelage, monetary tutelage of another country. But this is something that exists in the CFA franc, because there are agreements, monetary cooperation agreements, between CFA franc countries, monetary unions, and the French government. So you have this, and one also evolution that is important is that with the abandonment of the French franc for the euro in 1999, the CFA franc is also under, let's say, the tutelage of the eurozone authorities, and maybe we could talk about that later. Something also to say is that it's very unusual for monetary unions to have their currency pegged to another country's currency, because normally when you are in a monetary union, that means that the individual members are in a relationship of fixed exchange rate between themselves. Now, when you have this first level of fixed exchange rate and you take your currency, you peg it against another currency, this doesn't give you economic flexibility. And this is something you would see only during colonial times with colonial monetary blocks, because they were, but the colonial currencies were pegged against, let's say, the metropole's currency. If you take, for example, the euro, well, it's the currency of a monetary union, but the euro is not pegged against the dollar or any other currency. That is something that is rather normal, but that is not the case with the CFA franc. This is also a feature that makes it really singular.
Hmm. Thank you for explaining to us the mechanisms that make the system work and comparing them to the Eurozone and other monetary unions. That really makes the colonial aspect of the monetary union very clear. So thank you for explaining that. While we're in sort of the mechanisms of the currency, could you also please help us understand why convertibility was such an important guarantee in this process, and help us understand whether it's been as valuable as it said it was going to be, and if it has been valuable, to whom?
Thank you for this important question about the convertibility, the guarantee of convertibility. What I would like to say first is that, well, the convertibility guarantee generally intimidates people. It looks like a very grandiloquent concept, but it is really simple to explain to people. It is just a promise. The French Treasury promises to extend loans denominated in French currency. That means French franc before and since 1990 euros. So the French Treasury promises to extend loans denominated in French currency to each of the two central banks of the CFA franc zone. So whenever they lack foreign exchange to make their payments abroad or to defend the peg of the CFA franc against the French currency, the French Treasury promises that it could lend the desired amounts in French franc before and euros now. So this is the meaning of the guarantee of convertibility. It's a promise made by the French Treasury. But there are some counterparts to this so-called guarantee of convertibility, two counterparts. First, the French government is represented with veto power in the organs of the CFA franc zone central banks. We have two central banks, West Africa and Central Africa, and the French representatives are represented there and they have veto power. That means that the French government is sovereign over the CFA francs. It decides on monetary and exchange rate policy. No decision on monetary and exchange rate policy could be made without the approval of the French Treasury. So this is a clear indication of the sovereignty of the French treasury over the CFA francs. The second counterpart, we already saw it, is the obligation of both central banks to deposit with the French treasury at the operation accounts opened for them a substantial share of their foreign exchange reserves. But what could we say about this French guarantee? For us, for Fanny and me, it's like a scam to the extent that the rules are designed so that the CFA francs central banks do not need to ask the French treasury to extend them loans. So you have rules saying that, well, whenever your stock of foreign exchange will deplete to one extent before zero, let's say, when you have 20%, let's say, of the central bank liabilities, when the foreign exchange reserves represent 20% of central bank liabilities, the French treasury will induce the central banks to take all necessary measures so that they will not arrive at a level where they will need to activate its guarantee. So the rules are made so that the so-called guarantee is superfluous. So that's how the system works. And if ever these countries, CFA franc countries, need to have access to loans in hard currency because they have an economic crisis or something like that, well, this is normally the job of the IMF to step in and to provide the liquidity in foreign currency, generally in exchange for austerity measures. But if we look at the data, the empirical data, we see that since the 1960s to now, this so-called guarantee of convertibility has been activated only in the 1980s, I mean during the international debt crisis, and it has been activated only to allow for the repatriation of income and capital by the French corporations. For most of the rest of the time, that means for more than five decades, the CFA francs central banks have been net creditors vis-a-vis the French treasury. That means that generally for more than five decades, they have been accumulated foreign exchange reserves at the operation accounts opened for them by the French treasury. But it hasn't been the other way around, the French treasury coming to lend them money. It seldom happens, and it happened only during the 1980s to allow for the repatriation of, let's say, French corporations' income and capital, because at that time there was a fear that the CFA franc could be devalued. So that means that, practically speaking, African countries through their central banks have been lending money to the French treasury. People like us know this reality. But generally, the French authorities are abusing with this, the intelligence of people using this argument, saying that, well, if the CFA franc exists, it's because we provide the guarantee. Without the guarantee, the CFA franc would be worthless. It would not, let's say, inspire trust to any investor, etc. So that is the logic they are using. But this is the abuse logic. But they are using that to legitimate their involvement in CFA franc countries' economic and monetary affairs. And so who benefits from this guarantee? We could say that, the French government benefits from this so-called guarantee, inexistent guarantee, because it provides it a lever to legitimately be involved in the management of the economic, monetary, and financial affairs of African countries. The French companies also benefit from the existence of this so-called guarantee. In fact, the presence of France in the institutions managing the CFA franc, they benefit through at least two aspects. They don't face transfer risk. By transfer risk, we mean that there will be always enough hard currency to allow for the repatriation of income and capital from French corporations. Their risk they do not face is the exchange rate risk, meaning that these corporations will operate in an environment where the CFA franc value against the euro is always fixed. For example, it's not always that the CFA franc will be devalued or the CFA franc value against the euro will change on a day-to-day basis. So they have this certainty, and this is provided by the French presence in these central banks. And the French presence in these central banks is based on the argument that the French are providing something called a guarantee of convertibility, which doesn't exist. So the French government and the French corporations gains politically and economically from this fiction we call the guarantee of convertibility.
Thank you for explaining that. I think it was a really interesting part of the book to be taken through the mechanisms of it. Well, here's what it says. Here's how it's meant to work. And then the next bit of, well, here's how it actually does work in real life and how those things don't match up very well.
Yeah.
So thank you for explaining kind of both sides of that to us so that we can understand kind of what's being promised and what's actually happening. And this leads me on to ask Fanny, you next, because obviously, well, not necessarily obviously, but I think obviously, countries, the West African sub-Saharan countries that are in the CFA franc, there are a lot of reasons why countries may not be happy with this arrangement and may try to break away or leave or resist this arrangement. And Fanny, I was wondering if you could tell us about when this has been attempted and what happened when countries tried to leave.
So this is a very important question to and to understand this part of the story, we have to keep in mind that most of the presidents in power in the franc zone countries or the CFA countries are allies of France by choice or by necessity. They do not criticize the CFA franc publicly because they know that this would mean opposing France. But however, over the decades, there were periods of tension. In the early 1970s, for example, several African leaders called for a revision of the cooperation agreements signed in 1960 with France. And they were mainly focused on the agreement concerning the CFA franc because they could easily see already at this time that this currency raised many problems that was not a currency favorable to their country, to their development. But in such tense situations, the French government always uses the same technique. It first ignores, and when the tension is too high, it imposes a reform. But this is always cosmetic reforms. The changes are only of form and not of substance. But it works well in general and takes the tension and pressure off for a while. And what is worse is that France also uses violence against the opponents. France has repeatedly retaliated against leaders and intellectuals who criticize the CFA or seek to leave the CFA system. And we first saw that in 1960 with the case of Guinea. Guinea was the first to experience the difficulty of breaking away from France. The country, maybe you know that, had gained independence in 1958 against the wishes of the French authorities. At the beginning, the independent Guinea continued to use the CFA franc, but 2 years later, so in 1960, it decided to launch its national currency, the Guinean franc. And that was not a good news for France. So the French government organized an operation to torpedo this new currency. The secret services printed false Guinean franc notes and sold them on the Guinean market, which led, of course, to the collapse of the economy. And of course, Paris did so to discourage the other countries of the franc zone to launch their own currency. France was fair to lose his influence in the area, of course. And in the year following, the French government broke all other attempts of monetary emancipation. And we can cite also the case of the first Togolese president, Sylvanus Olympio, who was assassinated in 1963, 1963 in very troubled conditions by a group of Togolese soldiers closely linked to France. And Olympio was about to launch a national currency for his country. So his plan was abandoned by his successor, of course. We can also speak about more recently events in Côte d'Ivoire. We saw France using the CFA system as a repressive tool to direct the political trajectory of this country according to its interest. You remember that in 2011, during the post-election crisis in Côte d'Ivoire, France used the institutions of the CFA franc to organize the financial asphyxiation of the Ivory Coast, to put pressure on Laurent Gbagbo, the outgoing Ivorian president, and to support Alassane Ouattara, who was a protégé of French President Nicolas Sarkozy. And with the same means were used this year in early 2022 to punish the transitional authorities in Mali. So at the end, since 1960, only two countries have left the franc zone, and that's Mauritania and Madagascar in 1973. We can explain that because, Madagascar, for example, was able to leave the zone for several reasons. The Malagasy leaders at that time had a strong social base and a clear objective. But on the opposite side, French power was divided. President Pompidou was not very interested in Madagascar, while the Ministry of Finance wanted to keep the island in the franc zone. But at the end, the Malagasy leaders won the duel that lasted several months between France and Madagascar. So, yes, that's the story of the CFA franc violence and repression.
Mm. A very important part, particularly going back to what you said earlier about the agreements for French military bases, right? This is not unrelated, the idea that the French state continues to use violence in former colonies. But I want to come to a point that has been mentioned a little bit in Dongo, actually, by you in an earlier answer, about how the CFA franc operates within kind of more modern or at least post-colonial financial institutions. And obviously, we've spoken a little bit about the euro, but the way that the CFA franc operates within the euro is quite interesting. They're both monetary unions, but as you've already explained, quite different ones. How also does the CFA franc operate within, for example, the IMF?
Yeah, that is a very good question. And generally, people do not know exactly what is going on inside the IMF regarding the CFA franc. And there have been some historical ties, I mean, between the CFA franc zone and the IMF, starting, let's say, from the birth of the CFA franc, because as we told earlier, the CFA franc was born on December 1945, and it was declared at the International Monetary Fund, which was just born at that time, and it was declared by the French Provisional Government. When the CFA franc countries also got their independence, their membership to the institutions of the United Nations, including the IMF, was facilitated diplomatically by France. So there has always been a kind of a triangular relationship between France, IMF, and the CFA franc countries. And what is interesting in the case of the IMF is that, since this institution has been created, I mean, in 1944, 1945, when it started to work, until now, the role, the position of IMF managing director has often been occupied by French citizens. And the French citizens who occupy this position of IMF managing director, generally they have done their career at the Bank of France or at the French Treasury. And people from the Bank of France and the French Treasury, generally they know relatively well how the CFA franc functions and its importance for the French government and for French companies. So that means that any influence within the IMF that could potentially, harm, let's say, French interests or criticize the CFL franc generally tends to be muted due to the influence exercised by France within the IMF. And there are examples we could give, and some examples were given in our books. The first thing to say is that, well, in times of economic crisis, generally African countries are expecting that, well, that the French will provide their so-called convertibility guarantee. But what often happens is that France will hide behind the IMF to impose austerity, privatization, sometimes for the benefit of French companies, and also related austerity policies. All of that in order to not activate its so-called convertibility guarantee. And the thing is also, the IMF reports on the CFA franc zone, because every year the IMF publishes reports on the economic state of play of the two monetary blocks using the CFA franc. And generally, when you are used to read IMF reports on given countries, you see that there is a marked difference between the usual IMF reports and the IMF reports concerning the CFA franc zone. Because in that particular case, you would see that these reports bear the imprint of the French Treasury. They do not display the usual style of the IMF. Because you would see, for example, some complacency vis-à-vis the so-called French guarantee, and you would not see any, let's say, criticism about the detrimental consequences of the CFA franc overvaluation. And the fact is that there is a former World Bank economist and also leading expert on the CFA franc. His name is Ali Zafar. He recently published a book on the CFA franc. In his book, he says, well, I suspect that the IMF uses methods that underestimate the overvaluation of the CFA franc. And I think he has a point. One other aspect is also due to the, I mean, to the to this, let's say, important influence France has within the IMF. The IMF itself is not always entirely consistent in its policy recommendations when it comes to CFA franc countries. For example, generally we know that the IMF is really critical against overvalued exchange rates. In such circumstances, generally the IMF advocates a currency devaluation. This was the situation of CFA franc countries and most African countries in the 1980s. The IMF advocated the CFA franc devaluation, but France say, no, we refuse the devaluation. In other African countries having a similar context, their currencies were devalued, but we did not see the IMF complain about that. In 1994, maybe Fanny will say a word about that, there had been a devaluation of the CFA franc. What happened was that France worked in tandem with the IMF to impose a devaluation that was opposed by most CFA franc zone heads of government. But the IMF and France told them, you either devalue or you are cut off from international aid. But what is interesting here is that the work of IMF economists at that time showed that the rate of devaluation of 50% was not justified for all countries using the CFA franc. For them, and for most of, I mean, the economists, it would have been much more coherent, economically speaking, to have different rates of devaluation to account for the heterogeneity of national situations, rather than having a single blunt and harsh rate of devaluation of 50%. But this scenario, that means having different rates of devaluation, would have implied that each country of the CFA franc zone starts to issue its national currency, but this move would have spelled the end of the CFA franc zone, and France did not want that option. So that means that there have been technical work done at the IMF saying that it doesn't make any sense to devalue by 50% for all countries, but politically speaking, they backed a decision imposing 50% devaluation for all countries, and with the result that, well, there had been inflation, but I think Fanny will talk about that. So regarding the Eurozone, we could say that, well, when France decided to abandon its French franc for the Euro, it negotiated the peg of the CFA franc against the Euro. The French did not want to put an end to the franc zone, to the CFA franc zone, and wanted to maintain its influence despite that, well, the French franc would be abandoned. So the French negotiated with the European peers, and they said, well, we will no longer have our national currency, but we want to peg the CFA franc to the euro, and we want also to maintain the same level of influence. But some European countries, well, were not convinced because they thought that it could provide an unfair advantage to France and so on. But still, there was a compromise, and this compromise was, let's say, materialized in a decision from the European Union Council dated November 23rd, 1998. And in this legal document, there are some provisions, for example, that the Eurozone political and monetary authorities, for example, the European Central Bank and some, let's say, institutions linked to the European Central Bank, they must be informed beforehand in case the CFA franc is to be devalued, in case the CFA zone is to be enlarged to new members, or in case the provisions of the so-called French guarantee are to be modified. So that means that since the advent of the euro in 1999, yeah, there is a relationship of double tutelage exercise by the French government, the European zone political monetary authorities over the CFA franc zone.
Thank you for explaining that. It definitely helps put the CFA franc into sort of today's and how our financial systems work now, and really, again, emphasizes the amount of control that's not within the hands of the African countries. And obviously, devaluation comes up rather a lot. It's a pretty important part of the story in the book, and obviously what you're explaining to us now. So Fanny, I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about the impacts on France and on countries in the CFA franc zone when the French franc was devalued, as we've already heard a little bit about what happened when the CFA currencies were devalued.
Yeah, what happened is that the French franc was devalued several times over the decades to restore the economic competitiveness of France. And each time the CFA franc was devalued to the same extent in order to maintain the parity with the French franc. And for example, when the French franc was devalued in January 1948 by 44% against the dollar, the CFA franc also had to fall by 44%. And that means that the CFA countries were subjected to a decision that did not concern them and was not necessarily adapted to their economy. And they suffered from other impacts. If you take the devaluation of the French franc in 1969, it resulted in a loss of value for the external reserves, which were then mainly held in France, as at that time they had to deposit all their external reserves with the French Treasury. And we must note that France should have consulted the African countries before this devaluation, but guess what? They did not. And by acting like that, Paris violated the monetary cooperation agreements. So on two occasions, France decided to change the parity of the CFA franc with the French franc. In 1948 and also in 1994, as Dongo said. In 1944, there was, and Dongo said also that, there was against the winning of the majority of African leaders. And so why France decided to devalue the CFA by 50%, that's because at that time, the countries of the franc zone were going through a serious crisis. Their foreign exchange reserves had fallen significantly. And France at that time, and Dongo said also that before, should have exercised its so-called guarantee by lending them the desired amount of francs that could help sustain the peg. But it preferred, Paris preferred, with the support of the IMF, to devalue. And as you can imagine, this caused a strong shock in the franc zone. The fall of the CFA exchange rate stimulated an increase of the prices of imported goods and food, of which the CFA countries are major consumers, but also domestic prices. And as their foreign debts were largely denominated in foreign currencies, the burden of this debt expressed in CFA franc increased too. And at the end, only agricultural countries such as Côte d'Ivoire and Cameroon recorded some positive effects. As the prices of agricultural products are set in foreign currencies, devaluation indeed increased the value of their export earnings in CFA francs.
Very interesting to understand, again, different aspects of it to give us a better picture. And I think this brings up the really interesting point of monetary stability, because of course, this is one of the things that supporters of this system say is a real benefit of being in a monetary union gives stability. But Ndongo, I'm wondering if you can help us understand from your perspective, how much do you think there is this monetary stability benefit? And if there is a benefit, who is benefiting from it?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Because, you know, one of the main arguments for the legitimation of the CFA franc, I mean, the arguments justifying why this colonial monetary system should persist, is that, well, CFA franc countries, they enjoy monetary stability. And by monetary stability, well, this is also a very grandiloquent concept, but it's simple. They mean two things, basically. The first thing is that the CFA franc exchange rate, that means, for example, the CFA franc value against the euro or the dollar, etc. Well, the CFA franc exchange rate enjoys a relative strength because it is pegged to a strong currency, which is credible, etc., you know. And so, well, other African currencies, generally, they tend to depreciate over the medium and long terms, but this is not the case of the CFA franc. So this is one aspect of monetary stability. The second aspect is that, well, the CFA franc using countries, they have lower average inflation rates compared to their African peers. That means that from year to year, the price increases, average price increases, are lower in CFA franc countries compared to their African peers. Well, both points are empirically true. CFA franc countries, they have more stable exchange rates, I mean nominal exchange rates, and also lower rates of inflation. And you could take one telling example. It's the case of my country, Senegal. When you take Senegal's average annual rate of inflation, measured by a common indicator, the consumer price index. When you measure that indicator between 1996, that means after the devaluation, until 2019, before the pandemic, you will see that my country, Senegal, recorded an average annual inflation rate lower than all the countries of the world, except for Japan. So the data come from the World Bank, and well, it shows clearly that Senegal outperformed on this indicator the US, Germany, China, South Korea, etc. So when you see that, well, one question that comes to mind is this a great achievement? And the answer is it depends, because having a low inflation rate and a stable exchange rate, they might be desirable, but they are intermediate goals. They are not final goals. the most important economic goal, especially for a developing country, is economic development. That means achieving higher income growth per capita, increased domestic capabilities, more integration between African countries, etc. So on the final economic goals, we see that the CFA fund countries, they have recorded dismal performances. And the thing is that most of them are ranked among the LDCs, the least developed countries. Let's take one example, the case of Cote d'Ivoire. Cote d'Ivoire is the most important country of the CFA fund country zone in terms of economic weight. But the thing is, Cote d'Ivoire recorded its best level of real income per capita in 1978. When we say real income per capita, we are meaning the average income per capita. This is measured with adjustment for inflation and exchange rate variation. So this is a measure of long-term productivity. So you see that Cote d'Ivoire, the biggest economy in the CFA franc zone, they achieved their best level of real income per capita in 1978. In 2016, their real income per capita was one-third lower than this 1978 level. So you see the level of economic decline in Cote d'Ivoire. But this is not reserved to Cote d'Ivoire. You would see the same pattern of long-term economic stagnation or decline for most of the CFA fund countries. You take the case of Gabon. The Gabonese, the average, Gabonese citizen was richer, in 1976 compared to now. Because between 1976 and now, their income, real income per capita, has been divided by two. It halved basically. This is the same story for Cameroon, same story for Congo Republic, and in Senegal, it has been the same story until the 2015. So that means long-term economic decline or stagnation. So these elements for me allow us to, to relativize this argument of monetary stability, because this so-called monetary stability is achieved in a context of impoverishment for the majority and also economic exploitation by foreign capital, including French capital. And if I were to give an image, I would say that the CFA franc supporters, they take pride in a low inflation rate that is achieved by asphyxiating the economies by drastically reducing domestic credit creation. Because if there is no money created, if there is limited credit creation, well, you won't have, exaggerated levels of inflation, but that would imply that you will still remain underdeveloped. But this rhetoric of monetary stability has also been tested by the recent developments happened in the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic and the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Why? Because currently CFA franc countries are experiencing nearly two-digit rates of inflation, something they did not knew of, since the 1970s, you see. And this inflation is fed to some extent by the depreciation of the euro against the US dollar, because we have seen that the dollar has been appreciating and other currencies have been depreciating. So when you peg your currency to the euro and the dollar appreciates, that means your currency will depreciate against US dollar. That is what is happening with the CFA franc. And now people start to see why the CFA franc pegged to the euro is so dysfunctional. Because the CFA franc country's external trade is mostly invoiced in US dollars. The critical products they buy, the critical products they import, are most of them priced in US dollars. So whenever the euro depreciates against the US dollar, as it is happening currently, the prices of their imports and will increase. And this will stimulate what is called imported inflation. That means the inflation comes from abroad because you are importing the same goods but at higher prices. And so when the euro depreciates also, the domestic currency burden of the debt service tend to increase, because a significant share of CFA franc countries' foreign debt is denominated in US dollar. So despite the fact that the inflation rates remain lower in CFA-fund countries compared to most African countries, people are starting to see the economic consequences of having a peg motivated mostly by the French government's desire to control the economy, finance, and trade of its former colonies.
So on this idea of people beginning to see these things, and of course, your work, the both of you in this book, is definitely helping with that. As my last question, Fanny, can I ask you to update us on the current state of affairs regarding the CFA franc and various reactions to it now in 2022?
Yeah. What we can see is that for about 5 years now, or maybe 7 years, there has been a growing protest from civil society organizations. In Senegal, for example, you have a coalition of activists who is called Front pour une révolution anti-impérialiste populaire et pan-African, which means in English, Front for People's Anti-Imperialist and Pan-African Revolution. And this coalition launched a slogan, France dégage, which means France out, get out. And there is a lot of demonstration against France in several countries, in West Africa especially. And the people, in fact, don't tolerate anymore the French policy. That means CFA franc, and the strong French military presence in the Sahel, especially. And what we can also observe is that we now have some African opponents like Mamadou Koulibaly in Côte d'Ivoire and Ousmane Sonko in Senegal, who strongly criticize publicly the CFA franc. People obviously are less afraid to speak out than they used to be. So how France react to this mobilization? Well, Paris always used the same technique. So that means that French government has made a reform to silence the protesters. In December 2019, the President Macron announced with the President of Côte d'Ivoire, Alassane Ouattara, both announced from Abidjan, to everyone's surprise, a reform of the West African CFA franc. And the reform was for sure prepared by the French Treasury. The French authorities made a lot of publicity around this reform to say that it put an end to the CFA franc. But in reality, it has changed the functioning of the CFA franc for West Africa a little bit, but has not put an end to the monetary trusteeship link. Indeed, the reform puts nominally an end to the presence of French representatives to the central banks, government, governing bodies. The reform also removes the obligation for the central bank to deposit 50% of its foreign exchange reserve with the French Treasury. But in fact, these measures were replaced by other very similar control mechanisms. So France therefore remains in control of the system, and rather than committing to the demands of people, the French officials prefer to accuse the dissenting voice of falling into populism or surfing on the wave of what they call anti-French sentiment. And we must also note that there is an aspect of the reform announced in 2019, which created tensions and confusions in the region, because Macron announced that the West African CFA franc would be renamed ECHO. But the name ECHO already exists. It is the name chosen for a single currency project on which ECOWAS, which brings together 15 West African countries, including 8 from the franc zone, has been working for several decades. So France stole the name ECHO, in fact, and Nigeria was particularly angry, and what we can see is that, in fact, France doesn't want the ECOWAS project to succeed because it would mean, of course, that France would leave the region's monetary system and lose a larger part of its influence in the area. So today, yes, we can see the ECOWAS project postponed. Also that the name of the CFA has not changed. In fact, no one brings up the idea of calling it ECO anymore. So the CFA is still alive. And as we explain in the book, Dongo and I believe that the solution is for the countries to of the CFA zone would in fact to each create their own currency and to set up a solidarity system to pull part of their reserves. And so that would be the way to put an end to the CFA. And we economists like Samir Amin have been working for a long time on this type of alternative to the CFA franc. So perhaps we see this scenario come true in the years to come. But what is sure is that we are reaching, I think, a turning point in Africa's relations with France, especially in light of growing competition with China or Russia. So, yeah, the CFA is still alive, but for how many years, we don't know.
Fascinating. Well, what a great time to come out with this book and for us to be able to ask you about it and hear about the work to understand this really important turning point and debate. So again, to remind the listeners, the book is titled Africa's Last Colonial Currency, the CFA Franc Story from Pluto in 2021. Fanny and Dongo, thank you so much for being with us on the podcast.
Thank you for your invitation.
Thank you very much, Miranda.